Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levin.
Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. Sudden change of music there. Welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Happy birthday, Mark.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah.
That's my birthday music.
Beatles' Happy Birthday song. You didn't know that?
No, I was wondering what that was. All right. I guess I'm not a real birthday kind of guy.
You thought I didn't know, didn't you?
I'm like, what? I did. I wasn't going to tell anybody. You have totally ruined it.
Yeah. That's right.
All right. I refuse to get older. I'm against that.
Oh, okay. So that's how it works. So I just won't tell anybody when it's my birthday, right?
Exactly. God. Well, all right, Mark.
I just want to tell you, honestly, Mark, it's such a pleasure to work with you every day. It's honestly like one of the best parts of my job, and I really consider you not just a coworker but an awesome friend. So I hope you do get to enjoy your birthday in like a month or so when your schedule comes
down.
When my
campaign's over. You're going to make me cry now, Mark.
Well, that's just going to probably be due to lack of sleep.
Maybe so, or stress. Thank you.
No, but I mean it from the bottom of my heart. You're the greatest.
Well, you're the greatest too. I mean, let me tell you something. You work with Mark Grimaldi. All right, the viewers are now retching right now, but it's true. But working with Mark Grimaldi is such a joy. I will come in, and some days I'm like, Mark, what's the news? And he'll feed it to me, and I'm like, bam, I'm on board. And I couldn't do it without you, Mark, and Andrew as well. You're just terrific.
Thank you.
The whole team there is just
thank
fantastic.
You. Our dirty little secrets.
That's true. If you're going to tell me about my birthday, I'm going to
spill
other things as well.
I love it.
Oscar Wilde once said, I'm glad you haven't asked me how old I am. Oscar Wilde famously said that a woman who will tell you her age will tell you anything.
Yeah, that's very true, I feel.
So as a gay man, I will...
You get to adopt that?
I will take the prerogative my age.
We'll let you have that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, welcome to the Inside Scoop. Now I'm all embarrassed. I know what I'm talking about. This is Mark Levin. And we actually do have a lot of things going on in the news. The NSA, which has been spying on us for about 10 years now. Happy anniversary, spying. Actually, that's not true. They've been spying on us for about 13 years now. We just only known about it for 10 years or so. Finally, the court ruled that they can't do that. And I want to talk about why that is. And also specifically about the Patriot Act, which I was there when they wrote. So you want to know the intent of Congress. I was working in Congress at the time. As legislative counsel to Congressman Barney Frank, I know the intent. I was there, damn it. They should have asked me to testify. Also, I wanted to respond at some point to an email from a woman who, a very, very sweet woman, and I'll read her email entirely, who still thinks I'm wrong to call the people in Baltimore who burned down the senior center, who call them thugs. She thinks that's an awful, awful word, and I shouldn't have used it. I'll give a slight apology, maybe not all that she wants, but I'll talk about that in this broadcast. And I also want to talk about a very weird effort in Georgia to criminally punish people who do an awful, awful, awful thing. These are liberals in Georgia. Get ready for this, because obviously they should go to jail. You know what they're doing? They are registering minorities to vote. That's right.
What?
That's right. They're registering minorities to vote. And apparently that is something considered awful enough for Georgia to do something about. In any case, let me talk about all those things and really anything you want to talk about at 888-488-6275, 888-488-6275. And let's start with the NSA. So the Bush administration, back after September 11th, demanded that Congress pass something called the Patriot Act. And I know a lot about this because I was there at the time. I was working for Congressman Barney Frank. I was working on the Judiciary Committee. It was my job, along with many, many other Democratic and Republican lawyers on the staffs of members of Congress, to draft the Patriot Act, which stands for Providing Adequate Tools to... What was the R? something and intercept and obstruct terrorism. Something like that. Obviously, it was all done to get the word Patriot Act in there. In fact, it was actually called the USA Patriot Act, because as I recall, the Senate did something called USA and the House did something called Patriot. It's interesting what happened in the... Oh, here it is. The Uniting and Strengthening America, got it, USA, by providing appropriate tools required to intercept and obstruct terrorism. I think I got most of those. Anyway, that is the acronym of the USA Patriot Act. And I was there when it was done. And I think before we discuss why spying on all these Americans is wrong, I want to give you a little bit of history about how this act came to being. Some of this is personal history. Some of this you won't find in the history books. Some of it is just because I was there at the time. So September 11th had happened. We were all pretty upset about it, as was 99% of America. And I still remember that fateful day on September 11th, 2001, when we watched on TV as the first World Trade Center was burning. We watched on TV as I saw on TV as the second plane hit the second tower, and then the horror of the first tower crumbling. The Pentagon had been hit. At the time, we had heard that the State Department had been hit. That actually was false, although it may well have been true that the fourth plane, the one that landed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, was headed toward the Capitol, toward where I was, the Rayburn House office building attached to the United States Capitol. Anyway, it was definitely a time of fear and angst, and nowhere do we feel it more than in the nation's capital in Washington, D.C. In fact, I drove by a burning Pentagon as I drove home in the middle of the day that day, leaving the office. Soon after, someone knocked on our door and shouted, "The Republicans have deserted the building!" Apparently, the Republicans left and didn't tell us about it. Anyway, after September 11th, there was incredible pressure by the Bush administration on members of Congress to get them some kind of bill really, really quickly to go after the terrorists. And they wanted what would become the Patriot Act. And Senator Patrick Leahy, to his credit, was delaying things. He wanted to make sure before he did anything that was a severe attack on American civil liberties that he, as head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, was going to very carefully review it and make sure that everything was a careful balance of the tools necessary to fight terrorism and the civil liberties protections that all of us deserve and should be in the law. The House at the time, and by the way, both House and Senate were controlled by Republicans at the time, but the House was controlled by the Republicans, and Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin was the chairman of the committee. I remember him quite well. Barney, by the way, was the second leading Democrat on the committee. John Conyers was first. Barney was number two. So that gave me, as Barney's legislative counsel, pretty important seat at the table as the representative of the second most powerful Democrat on the committee, second most senior. But we negotiated long into the night with the conservatives, and we worked out a very carefully crafted plan over a period of 2-3 weeks that I'm very proud of, that was very careful to give the CIA, the NSA, the tools they needed to find out about foreign terrorists, to spy on foreign terrorists, to reduce the wall between the FBI and the CIA so information could be shared. But at the same time, was very, very careful to protect citizens' civil liberties. And in fact, I wrote an amendment for Barney Frank called the Frank Amendment that served to protect citizens' civil liberties. Anyway, this was a carefully crafted bill, and it was so carefully crafted and so carefully negotiated between myself and the Republicans and all the Democrats that something amazing happened that virtually no one even knows about, although it's a matter of historical record. Every single Republican and every single Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee voted for this bill. Now, the House Judiciary Committee was and is one of the most ideologically driven and partisan committees of all of them. Judiciary Committee deals with abortion and gun control and regulating marijuana and the Constitution and marriage equality and civil rights and voting and all manner of the most partisan issues imaginable. This isn't like when Republicans and Democrats get together and agree on agriculture or on transportation. No, this is all the hottest button issues all thrown into one committee. It's one of the reasons why I found, frankly, a very interesting committee to work on. And the people on the committee, the Republicans, were largely the same impeachment managers that had impeached Bill Clinton in 1998, including Jim Sensenbrenner, people like the current senator from South Carolina, who's running for president, Lindsey Graham. He was there, and a whole bunch of people that were very, very conservative, and some very liberal people like Maxine Waters, people like John Conyers, people to the left of Barney Frank. Save everyone from people way to the left of Barney Frank to people like Lamar Smith of Texas, far, far, far right conservative. And yet we staff did an amazing thing. We worked across the aisle. We worked days and nights. We worked into the night very hard, sometimes pulling all-nighters, to carefully craft a bill that protected civil liberties and gave the tools necessary to fight terrorists. It wasn't called the Patriot Act at that time. No one had been crass enough to give it that name. It was just a very carefully crafted bill. And on the day that every single member of the Judiciary Committee, from Maxine Waters on the far left to Lamar Smith on the far right, agreed to that bill, they did something in committee that I've never seen happen before or since. They all stood up and gave each other a standing ovation. The audience did too. That doesn't happen in committees. It just doesn't happen. So our bill then went from the committee to the House floor to be voted on. Meanwhile, Pat Leahy was doing a similar endeavor in the Senate, making sure that the Democrats and Republicans could work together and come up with a decent compromise. And every week, the Bush administration said, "Where's our bill? Where's our bill? If there's another attack on America," and remember, in September 2001, we feared an attack any moment. "If there's another attack on America," George Bush's people said, "it's the Democrats' fault. If there's a terrorist attack, it's the Democrats' fault because they're delaying progress on this bill." Now, mind you, this was just a few weeks after September 11th, and we were giving the Bush administration tools that they said they needed. We were just carefully protecting civil liberties. But the Bush administration made clear there's no time for civil liberties. Get us that bill. Well, Pat Leahy, as the chair of the committee, said, no, I'm not doing it. But the chair of every committee has a boss, and that boss is the majority or minority leader. At the time, that was Tom Daschle. Tom Daschle is from South Dakota, from a relatively red state. He was a Democratic leader, but from a relatively red state. And he was coming up for re-election in 2002. And the Bush administration basically made it personal. Tom Daschle, if you don't roll over Pat Leahy, if you don't force him to get his bill out of committee, we're going to blame you personally for any terrorist attack on the United States. Well, that apparently was too much for Tom Daschle, so he rolled over Pat Leahy. He did something extremely rare. The majority leader basically took it out of Pat Leahy's hands and took it right to the Senate floor without going through committee, without doing the careful process that I and others in the House had done. And the bill didn't have any protections for civil liberties and basically passed the Senate 99-1. Gave George Bush complete wish list. The only senator who voted against it was Russ Feingold, to his credit. And then the House, which had our carefully crafted bipartisan bill in its hands, ripped ours up, such hard work over several weeks, ripped ours up, threw it in the trash, and accepted the Senate bill without amendment, and lo and behold, created the USA Patriot Act. So I know what created the Patriot Act. I was there. I also mourned the loss of the bill that should have been the Patriot Act that never became law. The point of all this long story is, well, one, it's kind of interesting, I think, to share my own personal story, but also to let you know that we who drafted the Patriot Act, despite the fact that it gave the Republicans a very broad Section 215, never intended it to spy on hundreds of millions of Americans. And I'll get to the court ruling on it when I come back. If you want to call in, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Patriot Act, I know how it was made. I was actually there when it was made. And a panel from the U.S. Second Circuit Court of Appeals has just ruled that this act, this Patriot Act, which only allows you to gather relevant information, relevant to terrorism, means that you can't gather up hundreds of millions of Americans, their metadata, who they called and how long they talked, because that's just not relevant. And if that seems obvious to you, then the question is, well, yeah, it is. But why did it take 10 years to come up with this? 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let's go to Dave in Humboldt County, California. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Hey, Mark, I much appreciate you addressing this topic. It's a much more troublesome one for me than most. That is to say, we want to believe that our bureaucracy, our establishment, the government, is in the business of being the good guys out fighting crime. But I know firsthand, very directly, that such is not our good fortune. That is to say that when you have big, corrupt special interests, crooked banks, crooked insurance companies paying off the establishment, in effect, a Wall Street that owns many of our elected officials and the Democrat and Republican parties, then we have a different set of circumstances. When a citizen wants to expose and confront the kind of greed and abuses that are going on, that citizen finds himself suddenly a subject of surveillance from a crooked government. How do these people...
And I'll tell you something, Dave. In the next half hour, I'm going to give in detail how exactly such good citizens in Georgia who were doing nothing more than registering minority voters to vote have been thrown in jail for it. In things that frankly harken back to the Jim Crow era, and that's my story in the second half, so you don't want to miss that. But go ahead and finish your point.
Well, it's not an easy one, but I appreciate you having the courage to try to address it. We go back on this topic a long way.
Yes, we do, and I've been condemning it since Bush did it 10 years ago, and I didn't stop condemning it when Obama did it, because it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's an unconstitutional violation of the Fourth Amendment, and as these judges found out, it's not even authorized by the USA Patriot Act.
Well, we have to ask the question, how do these people that end up heading our NSA, our FBI, how do they get there? And of all things, they're appointed by the likes of Dick Cheney, who went out. And
you know, I'll tell you this. They get there. Some are career servants. Some get there different ways. I don't blame so much the people doing it as I blame the people who ordered it. And that certainly includes Dick Cheney. If you want to call in, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I've got an Inside Scoop that's really disgusting. It's gotten very little media attention that I want to share with you. It has to do with Georgia, and it comes out of a really terrific article in the New Republic by Spencer Woodman entitled, Register Minority Voters in Georgia, Go to Jail. Apparently, Georgia is not only doing its best to remove minorities from their voting rolls, they're also arresting people who dare to register voters to vote, minority voters. In doing so, I have to say that Georgia is probably improving on what it did in the Jim Crow era. It's managing to be even more racist, even more unfair, or at least as racist, as unfair. And if you don't believe me, check out this story. We can start with Helen Ho. Ms. Ho is an attorney with the Asian American Legal Advocacy Center. And she had worked to help naturalize immigrants in Georgia, new Asian immigrants who had become citizens, and to help them get to vote. So they registered thousands of new citizens and tried to get them to vote. And even when she found that these voters were not on the rolls, that she put them in months in advance and they still weren't on the rolls, they issued a sharply worded open letter on October 31st, just a few days before the 2012 election, demanding that Georgia let these citizens vote. Well, apparently her request that Georgia let its citizens vote was considered a criminal offense, because 2 days later, the Republican Secretary of State of Georgia launched an investigation into the Asian American Legal Advocacy Center and how it registered these voters. He determined that it was possible that the AALAC, in sending the letter to Georgia complaining about these voters not being registered, despite the fact they had evidence, photocopied evidence that these voters had filled out their forms and had done them all properly and had submitted them months in advance. The Georgia Secretary of State's response was not to register those voters, but to complain that the photocopying of the voter registration forms was a violation of criminal law. You see, if you send it in and you don't photocopy it, there's no proof you sent anything in. And if you do photocopy it, well, they're going to arrest you. For the last 2.5 years since the election in November 2012, the Georgia Secretary of State investigated the AALAC. They wanted proof that every single voter whose voter form was photocopied and sent to the Georgia Secretary of State to see why they hadn't been registered, that each of those people had individual written approval of that photocopying. And if they couldn't find written approval of every one of them, they were going to do a criminal investigation. Well, just this past March 12, after 2.5 years of investigating the possibly illegal photocopying scandal, they found that AALC has done nothing wrong. Not a single bad photocopy. But they still won't register the people on their lists. I wish I could say this was just one weird snafu. But, of course, Georgia has a long history of doing its best to keep minorities from voting. In fact, prior to the 2012 election, they just simply removed some 50,000 voters. This is a different one. They removed 8,000 voters from the rolls. They said that it was a technical error. Oops, we're not letting 8,000 minorities vote. It was, the Secretary of State of Georgia, Republican, said, quote, an honest mistake by a hardworking person, and unfortunately she has to be fired. Well, they did an internal investigation, and of course the cancellation of thousands of voters is a violation of federal law, which says you can't just wipe people off the voter rolls, and you cannot move anyone off the rolls within 90 days of an election. They moved them off the voter rolls 6 days past this deadline, and it would seem the Secretary of State should be the one that goes to jail. But he said, you know, it was just an accident. It doesn't matter. While the AALAC, this Asian American group, still complains about voters not being on the rolls, including voters they registered back in 2012. The very same voters they sent photocopies to the state to say, please register them. And the state responded with a criminal investigation. There's more. I wish there wasn't, but there's more. Again, this article gives it in explicit detail. You see, in September, before the midterms, Kemp announced another criminal investigation. This into another voter registration organization called the New Georgia Project, which is trying to bring 120,000, mostly minority voters, onto the rolls. As the Georgia Republican Secretary of State said, we're not going to put up with fraud. Well, New Georgia had said that they want to register 700,000 unregistered black voters. And as the Secretary of State told a group of Republicans on July 12th, and this is a direct quote, Democrats are working hard and all these stories about them, you know, registering all these minority voters that are out there and others that are sitting on the sidelines. If they can do that, they can win these elections in November. Unquote. So he says they're doing it. They're going to win the elections if they do it. And so what did he do? He announced a second criminal investigation. How dare blacks vote in Georgia? That can't be allowed to happen. Blacks voting, blacks being treated like citizens of the United States of America, blacks 150 years after the Civil War exercising their rights to vote? Not in Georgia. So he announced his criminal investigation to the New Georgia Project. And here's what he found. He found in the hundreds of thousands of voters that the New Georgia Project had registered, there were 50, this is what he alleges, 50 forgeries. Or in other words, 99.999% of the submissions were perfectly fine, but 50 were wrong. By the way, the New Georgia Project has responded to the 50, saying that Georgia state law requires its canvassers to turn in every single thing on the forms, regardless of what people write on them. So you can imagine someone writes their name and they have a typo of their address, and so they scratch it out, and or maybe they forget to scratch it out and then write their real name because, you know, they wrote 21st Street instead of 21st Road. That's a forgery! But according to the New Georgia Project, they're required to submit it because it was written down, even though nobody voted. None of this 0.001% of people actually voted. So based on this criminal investigation, Georgia's continuing to investigate it, and now they've narrowed it down to 10 out of 100,000. 10 potential violations of state law, and I'm going to read them to you because these sound really serious. One is that they cannot prove, with regard to 10 of hundreds of thousands of voters, that the registrants were informed they could turn in their own registration form, and that an online system to check their registration status is available, and that they may cast a provisional ballot in some circumstances, and that the registration requires the Board of Registrars to approve the application. They can't prove that all of 100,000 voters, they can prove that, you know, 99,990 were told of these things, but 10 may not have been told of these things, and that's a criminal investigation. To get an idea of how this criminal investigation affects the people in Georgia, the fantastic article by Spencer Woodman gives an example of a very small town, the town of Quitman, Georgia. Quitman is about 10 miles to the Florida state line. It's a town of fewer than 4,000 people. It's a town with a majority black population. It's a town that until 2010 always had a majority of whites running that town. What happened in 2010? Well, a bunch of blacks registered to vote. A bunch of activists got them out to vote. And lo and behold, in 2010, the town of Quitman, Georgia, got a black majority on its school board. What did the Secretary of State Georgia do? He sent out people with guns, armed investigators, to go door to door with the Georgia Bureau of Investigation in Quitman's black neighborhoods. Knocked on every door, I don't know about every door, went many, many doors. Did you vote? Did you vote? Did you vote? Looking for fraud. They couldn't find any. But I'm quite certain that those blacks that voted for the first time that had an armed guy at their door may be encouraged not to vote again. Apparently, even though they couldn't find any fraud, they still arrested a dozen voting organizers, including the three blacks who'd won seats on the county board. Then the governor of Georgia, Republican Governor Nathan Deal, issued an executive order saying that because these three members of the school board, the black members that had been elected by their town, were arrested, he was going to reinstate the whites that lost the race. Put them back in charge. The biggest felony complaint was against a Quitman woman by the name of Lula Smart. She faced 32 felony counts that carried more than 100 years in prison if she had been convicted. The biggest complaints were the claim that she actually took completed absentee ballots, sealed absentee ballots, and put them in the mailbox.
What?
That's right. Now, you know, murder will only get you 25 years in jail. But actually helping a voter with an absentee ballot carry it to the mailbox, if convicted, more than 100 years in prison. I don't know why she didn't just get the death penalty. Or maybe a lynching. After all, that's usually what they do in the South when blacks try to vote, right? Just lynch them? Lula Smart considered taking her life. Thank God she did not. Another Quitman resident faced only two felony charges of voter fraud. You know what Deborah Denard did, this black woman in Quitman? She helped her father fill out his absentee ballot. Guilty. Her father is missing both legs and is partially blind. Her father, David Dennard, says that he voted for who he wanted to without any coercion or meddling. All she did was help me just as she helps me with everything. The father said, I knew who I wanted to vote for, and I signed the ballot myself. She faced several years in jail for her crimes. Lula Smart had three separate trials. One of those trials, another black resident of this 4,000-person town, Bessie Hamilton, testified that the Georgia Secretary of State broke into her doctor's office, took her into an unused break room, and said, you have to sign this statement against Lula Smart. They came in with a gun to her job, forced her into a room, and said, if you don't sign this, you're going to jail. Well, she signed it. But 4 years after this election, when the blacks of Quitman had the audacity to actually vote for the candidates they want, a jury cleared Lula Smart of every one of the 32 counts against her. And the state has dropped all remaining charges against the group. There were a dozen arrests in Quitman, Georgia. Not a single conviction, not a single plea deal. But don't worry, Republicans, the damage was done. Because the teachers in the group were removed from their longtime teaching jobs because of their arrests. They were said, because they were arrested for these felonies, for which they were not guilty of and not convicted of, that they were not supposed to be around children, and these things would be on their record. They're trying to return to their jobs now, but many of them have fallen behind on their rent and utility bills because of the loss of work, and some of them risk being evicted. This is happening in Georgia in 2014 and 2015. This is not 1865. This is not 1915. This is not 1965. This is 2015. The same Georgia Republican Secretary of State who complained that if Democrats register hundreds of thousands of black people, that Republicans will be out of office, sent men with guns to put false charges against people who did nothing more than help people to vote. Tried to put someone in jail for 100 years for helping people register to vote. While this same man, Brian Kemp is his name, his office accidentally removed 8,000 black voters from the rolls just a few days before the election. Oops. My question is, why isn't he going to jail? And when Republicans tell you, don't worry about racism, we don't need a new Voting Rights Act, it's just as well the Supreme Court said that racism is over and we don't have to worry about it and we don't need a Voting Rights Act anymore. Just think about what happened in Georgia just this year when the Georgia Secretary of State sent armed thugs, and I'm going to use that word thugs, armed thugs into the homes of innocent people who did nothing wrong but want to vote. This is Mark Levine. Be curious to hear your thoughts on this story. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
Rumor has it he quotes the Constitution in his sleep. Is it super nerd? No, it's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Last word on the Georgia Jim Crow laws that still exist, or at least the Jim Crow actions by the Republican governor and secretary of state. Remember Ms. Helen Ho, the woman in charge of the Asian American Legal Advocacy Center in Georgia, the one that got arrested for daring to allow new immigrants to vote? And was accused of wrongful photocopying. Well, the people that she complained of, the ones that she photocopied back in 2012, the ones that she said, you've got to register these people, damn it. They have a right to vote and they've signed and completed all the paperwork. Some of those new citizens that registered back in 2012, still not on the voter rolls. I don't know. Maybe now that I've talked about it, Georgia will come arrest me. My last few minutes, I want to read to you an email that I got from a listener called Shelley. I won't read her last name unless she authorizes it. But hey, you know, you send me an email about a show, you got to know I may read it on the air. Shelley writes about me. She says, you sure won't back down easily. Thug was clearly not the right word to use with regard to the more violent protesters in Baltimore. But no matter how many people called you on it, you just stuck to your guns. So, Mark, if you were beat up while walking home, I'm sure you'd fight back. If you really look at the reality of these protesters' lives, that's really what they were doing. They've been harassed and had to live their lives in fear of having themselves or their sons killed or being given a citation that they can't afford that might land them in jail. They've really been beaten down. Don't you get it? Nonviolence is a more effective tactic, but the ANC used violence. And I think I remember that the exalted Nelson Mandela did as well. Also, the particular epithet you chose is almost like using the N-word in these circumstances. It's time for you to back down! Exclamation point. P.S. I didn't know you were so cute. Thank you for going to my website, Shelley. You know, see, so she's attacked me, but then she's like, oh, you know, she appeals to my ego. Look, Shelley, with all due respect, I understand that people are beaten down. I have demanded justice for Freddie Gray. I've supported the indictments of the police. I applaud the nonviolent protesters. You also understand nonviolence is a more effective tactic, and I don't think we've quite reached South Africa yet, although, given my story in Georgia, it makes me wonder sometimes. The people whom I called thugs, and thugs may not be the best word. I will partially back down. It's a word that President Obama used. It's not actually a word that I use very often. I might have called them misguided or worse than that, gang members. When they went and they burned down a senior center where their grandparents would otherwise live, burning down their own neighborhoods, looting the CVS, that's not a protest against police. That's a cry out. It's at best, a cry out for justice, and at worst, it's just a bunch of people taking advantage of the situation. It's Mark Levine. Talk to you tomorrow.